Vaishnavrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shagal Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adwaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gaur Gopinath Shyama Kunja Radha Kunja Giri Gauranam ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma ki jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Vrindavan ki jai. Tulsi Narayana ki jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada. All glories to Sri Krishna Sadhu. Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutapada Kamalam Sri Guru Krishna Vamstra. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam 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 Vitam Stam Sajiva. Sadhvaitam Sadhvadutam Bodhijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Deva Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamcha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Chapter 18, Diti Vows to Kill King Indra, text 44 and 45. Let me start here. Kasyapa Muni is actually starting to implement his strategy. Iti sanchincha Bhagavan. Maricha Kurunandana.
Maricha Kurunandana.
Uvacha kinchit kupita. Atmanam cha vigarayan.
Atmanam cha vigarayan.
Is there, did I look and forget to put a long mark over it? Is it maricha or maricha?
Maricha.
Okay, it's maricha. So there's no second A short, I
think. Yeah, second A short. Maricha.
Iti sanchintya Bhagavan.
Iti sanchintya Bhagavan.
Maricha karunam kurunandana.
Maricha kurunandana.
Uvacha kinchit kupita.
Uvacha kinchit kupita.
Atmanam cha vigarayan.
Atmanam cha vigarayan.
Iti sanchintya Bhagavan.
Iti sanchintya Bhagavan.
Maricha kurunandana.
Maricha kurunandana.
Sanchincha, thinking. Bhagavan, the powerful. Maricha, Kasyapa Muni. Kurunandana, O descendant of Kuru. Uvacha, spoke. Kinchid, somewhat. Kupitaha, angry. Atmanam, himself. Cha, and Vikarayan. Condemning. So what is Kasyapa Muni called in this verse? Two words he's called.
Maricha.
And?
And Bhagavan.
And why is he called Bhagavan?
Because he's powerful.
Because he's powerful. And why is he called Maricha?
Son of Maricha.
And his son of Maricha. Ruchi and one of the daughters up. Kardama and the Huti. This is son Marichi. And where was Marichi born from? Where did he come from?
Brahma.
Brahma. Yes, from Brahma. So he's a very powerful personality. And of course, he's the father of what great person?
Brahmadev.
And he appears in Krishna Leela as?
Vasudev.
He's Vasudev, and Aditi is Devaki. Aditi is Devaki. So, again, remember that Indra is one of his sons by Aditi. So, we were talking about yesterday how Aditi wanted to kill her stepson. So, she's really asking her husband to have a son with her that will kill one of his other sons. What he's asking for. So therefore it says here, Kinchid Kupitaha, he became a little angry. And Atmanam Chavikarayan, he condemned himself. He said, you know, why was I so attached to this woman that I just gave her a promise that I'd just do whatever she wanted without finding out what it was first. Okay, translation. See, Sukadeva Goswami said, Kasyapa Muni, thinking in this way, became somewhat angry. Condemning himself, O Maharaj Pariksit, descendant of Guru, he spoke to Diti as follows. I don't know where they're getting the Maharaj Pariksit. Oh, Guru Nandana. Okay. So we see the great devotees like Kasyapa Muni sometimes do become angry and condemn themselves and say, oh, I've done something foolish. Maharaj Pariksit also did that after he put the dead snake around the sage's neck. Now, is that condemning themselves like someone just sitting around lamenting in ignorance? Oh, I'm so...
No, it's that. He wants to do something about it.
He wants to do something about it. He wants to take some action. Also, Prabhupada says in regard to Maharaj Pariksit that the devotee's sinful activities are burned up in the fire of repentance. So to mourn one's foolishness is appropriate. But to sit around condemning yourself eternally is not appropriate. It's not something that's desirable. It's not pleasing to Krishna. Just like even when we're dealing with somebody, if the person's made a mistake and they just go on and on and on, oh, I'm so useless, is it pleasing? Do we like that? No. If a person says, oh, wow, I really made a mistake. Boy, that was a really foolish thing to do. I guess I really caused some problem. I guess I really hurt you. I guess I really caused some inconvenience. Now I think I'd like to do something about it. That's pleasing. But for a person just to go around, you know, after about 5 minutes, it's not pleasing anymore. So there's a difference. And many times devotees try to imitate. They read this sort of thing. They try to imitate, but they just simply come to the mode of ignorance. And also we see that he became a little angry. Kinship. He became a little angry. Obviously, I've done something foolish. I've done something that's not pleasing to Krishna. Okay, going on to the next verse. Sri Kasyapa Uvacha, Putraste Bhavita Bhadre, Indra Ha Deva Bandavaha. Now, that's the important line we're going to look at this verse. Indra Ha Deva Bandavaha. Samvatsaram Vratam Idam, Vratam Zavna, Yad Anjo. Darayishyasi. Kasyapa Muni said, my dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. Now, we were looking at this verse yesterday, and really, that's all the verse says.
That's
all it says in the Sanskrit. The Prabhupada goes on and says another sentence. He says, however, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. And what Prabhupada's doing here is he's giving two different meanings of the same verse. And especially he's looking at this line, Indra ha deva bandhavaha. And as you all know, in Sanskrit, you combine letters. So if you have two as, if you have an a and an a, or an a and an a, or an a and an a, or an a and an a, any combination of a and a, when they, if they're next to each other, they become a.
And the same with it and e and u and u. Now the other ones, a, I, o, are all already combinations of other vowels, just like o is a combination of a and u. And once they're combined, you can't always tell what they were originally. Just like sometimes, you know, when you cook something, it's difficult to tell exactly what the ingredients were, because once they're combined together, they somewhat change. So if you have an ah, how do you know if it was two ahs or two us or one ah and one ah? You really don't know. And you have to try to judge by the context. And sometimes you have a situation where you could have opposite meanings, like we have the word niyamagraha. It can be niyamagraha or niyamagraha. The meaning is different. One means to follow, one means not to follow. So purport. The word Indraha refers to an asura who is always eager to kill Indra. An enemy of Indra is naturally a friend to the asuras, but the word Indraha also refers to one who follows Indra, who is obedient to him. When one becomes a devotee of Indra, he is certainly a friend to the demigods. Thus the words Indraha Deva Bandhavaha are equivocal. For they say, your son will kill Indra, but he will be very friendly to the demigods. If a person actually became a friend to the demigods, he certainly would not be able to kill Indra. So, my dear gentle wife, if you follow my instructions regarding this vow for at least 1 year, you will surely get a son who will be able to kill Indra. However, if you deviate from this vow of following the Vaishnava principles, you will get a son who will be favorable to Indra. So he's saying, Indra ha deva. Indra is obvious. Then ha, and then you have deva. So is it ha deva or is it ha adeva? Bandhavaha. Bandhavaha means friends. So is it going to be somebody who's a friend of the devas or someone who's a friend of the not devas? So how did Diti hear this first, you think, when her husband said this to her? Indra ha deva bandhavaha. How did she hear it? What did she think he was saying?
Are you getting out of the story?
No, not at all.
That's the next comment.
She heard Indra ha adeva.
Yes, exactly. What she heard him say was, you're going to get a son who's Indra's enemy and who's a friend of the demons. That's what she heard. Is that what he meant?
So he didn't spell, Prabhupada spelled it out for us, but she didn't.
She didn't get it.
Yeah.
She didn't get it.
He
tricked her. And he tricked her because he, as we read yesterday, he decided, okay, I have to keep my vow. I made a promise. You're asking why did he feel he had to keep his promise? Judge Richard Marsh gives a lecture on this where he says, if you can't keep your word, then who are you? How can anybody have any relationship with you? How can anybody deal with you? They don't know who you are, what you are. It's like dealing with quicksand. So obviously there's sometimes when one has to break one's word, but it should be a very unusual thing that what I say I'm going to do, I did. There was one devotee who said to me, I'm going to give you a $5,000 donation for your project. But he didn't do it right away. And the next time I saw him, he said, I'm still going to give you that donation. And he works in investment banking. I said, Prabhu, you know, I know there's been a financial collapse and you probably don't have the money anymore. He said, that's true, but I told you I would do it and I'm going to do it and that's all. He said, there's no question. He said, I'd borrow the money to give you that if necessary because I told you I was going to give it to you. So when you deal with people like that, you can have a relationship of trust and respect. Isn't it? And once somebody breaks their word, it's very difficult to reestablish trust. It often takes a long time to reestablish trust. So he thought, okay, I've got to keep my word, but at the same time, this is from all levels, it was improper. It was improper from the level that Indra's a devotee and he's not going to give his wife. I mean, what greater Vaishnava aparad is that than to kill a Vaishnava? That's the ultimate Vaishnava aparad. So he doesn't want to be implicated in Vaishnava aparad. He doesn't want to be implicated in destroying the proper workings of the universe. You know, not just a Vaishnava, but Indra as the king. He's the administrative person. Killing the king is always considered a greater offense Just like even killing a police officer is a greater offense than killing an ordinary citizen. And then what to speak of the interest of his child? You know, he's not going to give one family member the facility to kill another family member. The Prabhupada always uses this example in regard to meat eating. He says if your father has one child who's mentally deficient, he's not going to give the other children permission to kill that child and eat them. You can't say, oh, father, this is a useless child, or, you know, in some way, a bum. Can I kill them? What to speak if it's a good child? So he was really stuck here. We notice that Dhritarashtra, in a similar circumstance, made the wrong decision. When Duryodhana was coming to him and saying, I want to kill the Pandavas, who were, of course, they weren't Dhritarashtra's sons, but they were his nephews, and they were under his protection. He said, okay, go ahead and do it. Even though Yudhisthira was the rightful heir to the throne, and even though Yudhisthira was under his protection, and even though Yudhisthira was practically like one of his sons, still, he favored one son over another. So Kasyapa Muni's not going to do that. He's not saying, no, sorry, I'm not going to have some play favorites here in my family. I'm not going to favor you over my other wife. I'm not going to favor your children over my other sons. I need to do what's right on all levels. And at the same time, I made a promise. So he speaks this hidden meaning so that she hears what she wants to hear. Because he's trying to trick her into becoming a Vaishnavi. He's trying to trick her into actually, as we were talking about yesterday, actually having her desire fulfilled, but on a different level, in a different way than she's thinking. Because the way that she's thinking, he knows, it's not going to really be fulfilled. He knows her real desire is to have peace in her heart over the deaths of her sons. That's what she really wants. And she's thinking the way to get peace in her heart is to kill her son's so-called killer, who wasn't even Indra in the first place. She's thinking, that's going to give me peace, or as they say in modern psychology, that'll give me closure. Right? It'll be done. I'll feel a sense of completeness. But he knows that's not going to work. So he's going to the essential need, the underlying, the real need, and he's giving her a real strategy to do it, but he knows that she won't accept that outright. So he's being a little sneaky. Now we find that in preaching or in guiding people, we often have to do that. We often cannot tell people what we know would really ultimately benefit them at a particular time because they're not able to hear it. If Kasyapa Muni had said to Diti, you know, your real problem is you just want peace and closure, and the real way to do that would be to become detached and accept that this is the will of God, that your sons were demons, you knew they were demons, they deserved to be killed. And not think in terms of bodily attachment. That would be your real solution. But she'd just become very angry. I remember I was once talking to a woman whose husband had told her when they married, when I'm 50, I'm going. And she never really took it that seriously. You know, before they got married, he said, I'll marry you, but when I'm 50, I'm going. And actually, I think even his Shiksha Guru had told him, you know, this is fine, but when you're 50, you need to go. So when he was 50, he left. I mean, he just left. It wasn't even some gradual thing, you know. It was his 50th birthday. He said, goodbye, I'm out of here, put on saffron, and doesn't even talk to her anymore. And so she was very upset.
That's real closure.
Yeah, isn't it? So, you know, she was very upset. And she came to me with this problem, and, you know, she's, what can I do, what can I do? And at a certain point in the discussion, she said, oh, all of my suffering is due to the fact that I'm attached. I said, yeah. I thought, wow, she gets it. And then again, you know, it lasted for like 10 seconds. And I tried to go there. I tried to say, okay, yes, you should become detached. It just didn't work. So finally I just said, you know, just keep chanting Hare Krishna. Everything will be okay. Eventually, it'll all be okay. Krishna will take care of you. Everything will work out. And I knew that the way she was hearing that was that everything will work out materially. Somehow there'll be some material solution. I knew that that's how she was hearing it, but that was the only thing she was able to hear. And I knew that if she just keeps chanting and reading, she'll come to the point where she'll see, okay, Krishna's actually bringing me closer to him. This is his blessings. So if we preach to somebody above their level of ability to hear, then we're committing the ninth offense. And why do we preach like that to people? Why do we sometimes tell people something that's beyond their ability to accept? What's motivating us when we do that?
You don't want to hit them over the head with Bhagavad Gita?
Well, that's when we do it right. But when we do it wrong, what's motivating us?
False pride.
False pride. I know more than you. I know what's better for you more than you do. Here, let me shove it in your face. And the result of that is the person just becomes disturbed and antagonistic. You know, we end up impeding their progress. And sometimes it's very hard because you can see, wow, if the person just did such and such, they'd solve their problem and they'd be happy, right? Doesn't this happen? You're working with someone and you just see crystal clear, wow, this is what they need to understand. This is what they need to do. But when you try to present it, you get resistance. You get generally anger. Anger and anger at you, or anger at the process, or anger at the scripture, or anger at the guru, or denial. And then you have to step back and present things in another way. Yes, yes, if you take up this process, you'll get an Indraha Deva Vandava. Don't worry. Everything will be okay. Yes, everything will be okay, but not the way you're thinking. Everything is going to be okay. And then what about for us? Also, you know, sometimes I've had people come to me and say, tell me the truth. And I'm always wondering, can they really take the truth? How much can I say? So also we need to be honest with ourselves as to how much we're willing to accept. What is our position? And I really make the point to people, the point about being honest about where you are and what you're able to accept and what you're able to surrender to is not so you can just stay there. It's not so you can say, well, the only thing I can do is, you know, one regulated principle, two mantras a day, and that's just where I am. That's not the point of being honest, is so you can understand what the next step is. Exactly like, you know, we're going to be flying in about an hour to Hilo. And if you're going to fly somewhere, you have to know where you're starting from. When you buy the ticket, you have to know not only your destination, but your start place. If I bought the ticket from, you know, Maui to Hilo, it wouldn't do me any good. I'd go to the airport with the ticket, and they'd say, but how are you going to get from here to Maui? So if we start off thinking that, and of course, generally when we're new devotees, we think we're very surrendered. We think we're practically pure. You know, but if I think I'm starting from Maui, I can't make the journey at all. I have no way to start my journey. My ticket is invalid. So one should be honest about one's own position so we can know what is the most appropriate thing for me. What should I do? Should I be following principles of Varnashram? Should I be following principles of Raghunuga Bhakti? Maybe I should just be giving in charity. You know, well, where's my level? Where do I fit in the progression of Bhagavad Gita 12th chapter? Where do I fit in? And not demand that the people who are guiding us tell us things that we're not ready to hear. And not try to jump into things that we're not ready to hear. And on the other hand, not to also artificially stay back. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, our progress is impeded if we either go too slowly or too fast. So I think in ISKCON we often preach about going too fast, but we also have to be careful about going too slowly. So sometimes we are ready to make the next step. Sometimes we are ready to become more renowned. Sometimes we are ready to hear more bitter truth. Sometimes we are ready for a higher surrender. We have to be honest about that too. Well, okay, but am I ready to make the next step? And not be afraid. You know, the next step looks kind of scary. So both ways, when we're helping people to understand their position so we can help them accordingly, and if we're asking for help to understand our position so that we can ask for appropriate help. Thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.